It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome, one and all. It is March 30th, 2021, and it's 1900 UTC. So, that means it's time to get some news going. I know I kind of repeat the intro, but it's helpful for me to get in the right mindset to go ahead and say, hey guys, we're talking about today. Whoops. Let's go ahead here and not make new bookmarks. We're opening bookmarks because we have lots of news today. I ordered a sandwich, El Sandwiche, and it is sitting on the table, so I am motivated. So we're going to go ahead and start the show the way we always do, and that's with some, here we go,
world news.
That's right, world news. All right. First, some tax avoidance. So this has come to us from Reuters. Indian authorities have blocked at least two of ByteDance's bank accounts for alleged tax evasion, prompting it to ask a court to quash the directive that it fears will hit its operations. Two sources with direct knowledge told Reuters. ByteDance in January cut its Indian workforce after New Delhi decided to retain a ban on its popular video app TikTok, first prohibited last year following a border clash between India and China. China has repeatedly criticized India's move and said it suspected it was against WTO rules. ByteDance, which issued a statement contesting the Indian decision, has around 1,300 employees in India, most of whom service its overseas operations, including work on activities such as content moderation. In mid-March, authorities ordered two of ByteDance India's bank accounts in Citibank and HSBC to be blocked because of alleged evasion of certain taxes and online advertising dealings. So, we'll see what happens here. In its court document, which the source was privy to, ByteDance India has said its entire business has come to a standstill because of the bank freeze, that such an action violates its rights to carry free trade in business. The company was already struggling with the India ban. This can hit employee salaries and vendor payments, the second source said. TikTok had come under scrutiny around the world during Trump's administration, which alleged the app posed national security concerns. So, this will be So, TikTok apparently doesn't have deep pockets, so freezing its bank accounts gonna hurt it pretty bad. We'll see how that plays out. Maybe there'll be a new dancing app that all the kids are crazy for soon. All right. Now let's get into more serious news. Spain sets aside 665,000 euros to pay for exhumations at Valley of the Fallen Memorial. Yeah, you heard that right. We're digging up people. The Spanish government approved on Tuesday a 665,000 euro fund for the exhumation of graves at the Valley of the Fallen, where 30,000 victims of the Spanish Civil War and General Francisco Franco's dictatorship lie buried. The left-wing coalition government promised state-funded exhumation of the bodies of victims of the war and the dictatorship to help families bury their relatives in civilian cemeteries alongside their loved ones. Those buried in the crypts and ossuaries at the Franco-era site include many from the losing Republican side, whose bodies were moved there during Franco's rule without the permission of their families. Some of those families have spent decades calling for the right to exhume remains from the site. Government spokesman Maria Jesus Montero said the government had so far received more than 60 exhumation requests from relatives for the site. For the Spanish government, it's essential to comply with these requests and to locate and exhume the corresponding remains, Montero told a news conference. The government intends to transform the Valley of the Fallen into a civil cemetery that will hold the remains of people killed on both sides of the 1936 to 1939 Spanish Civil War, in which Franco's fascist forces defeated leftist Republicans. Aside from the actual exhumation and forensic efforts, the works will involve scientific studies and repairs to ensure preservation of the remaining ossuaries. More than 45 years after Franco's death, his legacy remains a divisive issue in Spain, especially following the rise of the hard-right Vox Party in the past few years. The government's taken a series of steps to remove dictatorship-era symbols, including moving Franco's remains in 2019 from the massive mausoleum at the Valley of Fallen he had built for himself to a small family crypt. So, this is news coming from Spain, and yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting. This is less morbid, more sad. We'll not be able to pay our bills. Turks set to lose a COVID-19 income support. When the COVID-19 pandemic hit Turkey last year, the government stepped in to support workers who lost their jobs. At its peak, over 3 million people were receiving two-thirds of their lost salary under the so-called short labor pay scheme, and 1.3 million continue to do so. But the scheme is now ending as President Erdogan starts easing COVID-19 restrictions, and many people are worried about how they will make ends meet. With a ban on layoffs remaining in place, employers say hundreds of thousands of workers will have to be put on unpaid leave because businesses are still struggling. "I did not buy clothes for a year. We were focused on paying our bills and supporting our daughter's education," said Nuri, a chef who's taken out a loan to support her family and tried to make extra money by selling jewelry online. Like others, she declined to allow her full name to be used in this article for fear of repercussions. Without her current support, Nuri, 37, will be left with a daily income of just 47.7 lira, which is $5.67 in the U.S. dollars, under another government scheme. "We won't be able to pay our bills with unpaid leave support," she said. "The uncertainty is impacting us psychologically." And this is something that I've noticed all over. It's happening in the, at least in Texas, I've noticed it happening. The availability or the capacity for people to return to work, like, hey, vaccines are available. Great. All right, so we're going to open all the businesses. But it's like, don't you want the people to get vaccinated before you open the business? It's like they're just doing everything all at once and not considering how it logically would flow. And so stuff like this where it's like, hey, you know what? We're going to just open everything back up and it's just going to be like a faucet. And I think it's much more like a slow, cranky engine. We're going to have to prime it with lots and lots of fuel. Authorities hope Turkey's relatively swift vaccination program will help contain further surges. In the meantime, Erdogan has announced additional support for restaurants and their staff during the month of Ramadan, starting in 2 weeks. The government says it will also direct funds from the short labor payments to support employment, covering social security payments for some private sector employees and effectively decreasing personnel expenses. But some employers say those moves will not be sufficient. So, yeah, it's sad news in Turkey. I hope that they don't starve. Okay, so now let's talk about some active murder and death. And this is disputed. France disputes this. So we're going to The Guardian. A French airstrike killed at least 19 civilians in central Mali in January, a United Nations report has said, contradicting claims by officials in Paris that the target of the attack was a gathering of armed extremists. The accusation will further complicate international and local efforts to combat violent Islamic groups in Mali, which have grown in strength in recent years. It's also likely to fuel anti-French sentiment in Mali, a former colony. The UN investigation was launched after French warplanes struck a target on January 3rd near the remote village of Bounty in the unstable central Mopti province. French officials rejected reports from residents of the village that the strike had hit a wedding party and said dozens of fighters from Islamist groups were killed in an intelligence-led operation. However, investigators from the UN mission in Mali, known as MINUSMA, reviewed evidence and interviewed more than 100 people, concluding the reports of a wedding were accurate. The group affected by the strike was overwhelmingly composed of civilians who are protected persons under international humanitarian law, said the report. This strike raises serious concerns about the respect for the principles of the conduct of hostilities. It also found that 19 civilians had died in the airstrike and 3 extremists who had been armed. Doubts about the nature of the target surfaced immediately after the attack. One man that was wounded told the Associated Press that a small group of extremists had approached civilians celebrating a wedding and demanded the men in the attendance separate from the women. "We were in the process of carrying out the orders when I heard the sound of an airplane and immediately a strike from above. Afterward, I didn't see anything because I was unconscious," the man said. So, that's pretty dramatic and awful. Tabital Pulaku, an association that promotes the culture of Mali's Fulani ethnic group, reported an airstrike that claimed the lives of at least 20 civilians. The French Ministry of Defense issued a strongly worded statement on Tuesday contesting the conclusions of the report, saying they were based on unverifiable witness testimony and hypothesis without any proof whatsoever. And then it kind of goes back and forth on that. One thing's for sure, drone strikes and remote warfare sure make it easy to kill people and not really recognize that you've killed someone, you know, you ended somebody's life. So let's go back to knives, make everybody have to stand face to face and kill each other with fists and knives. And we'll maybe we'll have fewer deaths. Sorry, that's a bit extreme and callous, but it does seem like people are pretty desensitized to how much death happens in these battles. Speaking of battles, let's talk about Ethiopia and the Tigray. Days after Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed finally admitted Eritrean troops were in Tigray after months of denial, the Nobel Peace Prize winner on Friday said they would be withdrawing from Ethiopia, but the stunning announcements offered no word on military or political resolutions to a deep crisis, and the devil lies in those details. It was an extraordinary week in Ethiopia. On Monday, troops from neighboring Eritrea were not officially present on Ethiopian soil. For months, the Ethiopian government simply denied the involvement. On Tuesday, March 23rd, it was suddenly official. Eritrean troops were indeed present. After 5 months of denials, the Prime Minister admitted that Eritrean forces had crossed. That's what we talked about. We mentioned that before. Addressing parliamentarians sitting stone-faced behind pandemic masks, the country's Nobel Peace Prize, why do they keep saying that? Admitted that human rights violations had been committed during the conflict, but he omitted any official remorse. On Friday morning, he announced that the Eritrean troops, who were officially not present on Monday, would be withdrawing from Tigray. In a statement posted on Twitter a day after... What? Who cares about Twitter? The presence of Eritrean forces in Tigray, where witnesses have described them looting, killing, and raping civilians, has been a thorny issue in Ethiopia since November, when Abiy sent federal troops into the northern region. So yeah, it is quite a bunch of stuff, a lot of movement going around. There's one spot I wanted to mention, and that's where the U.S. got involved. Abiy's sudden volte face came days after U.S. Democratic Senator Chris Coons met with the Ethiopian leader in Addis Ababa over the weekend. Coons, a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, was on a mission by the Biden administration to convey President Biden's grave concerns about the humanitarian crisis and human rights abuses in the Tigray region and the risk of broader instability in the Horn of Africa. The influential U.S. senator's visit was widely viewed as a sign of Washington's re-engagement in the Horn of Africa, particularly on democratic and humanitarian rights issues. But upon his return to Washington, Coons admitted that during his talks, Abiy maintained a tough position on a recent U.S. government report, which concluded the Ethiopian government is conducting a systemic campaign of ethnic cleansing. The combination of international and domestic developments made it untenable for Addis to continue denying Eritrean involvement in the conflict. Seems like the pressure from the U.S. and the EU and other donors contributed to the shift. So, yeah, you can read the full story. It's definitely a complicated issue over on France 24. So thanks for going along with me as we kind of wade through it and muddle through it. I think these stories from Africa are really interesting, but I just am so ignorant of a lot of stuff going on there that it sometimes gets a little muddy. So thanks. All right. Well, what else is going on in Africa? Well, remember Mozambique? We talked about them yesterday and a few days before. Well, Portugal is said to send soldiers to Mozambique to help train the armed forces in its former colony, where authorities battling an Islamist insurgency search for tens of thousands of civilians who fled an onslaught on the northern coastal town of Palma. Many of those fleeing are believed to have scattered into dense surrounding forest or to have attempted to escape by boat when Palma came under attack on Wednesday. Mozambique's government has confirmed dozens of deaths, including at least seven who died when militants ambushed a convoy of vehicles trying to escape. Witnesses have described bodies in the streets, some of them beheaded. It's a real humanitarian catastrophe, Lola Castro, World Food Program Regional Director, told Reuters. People are scattered all over the place, by boat, by road. Reuters has not been able to independently verify the accounts from Palma, a logistics hub for adjacent gas projects worth around $60 billion. Most communications to the town were cut on Wednesday. Phone calls to Mozambique's government and security officials went unanswered Tuesday. So, the Islamic State claimed the attack on Palma on Monday via its Amaq news agency. A U.S. official said it may show the group's increasing brazenness in Mozambique, where militants are now seeking to hold towns. Oh, man. I need some water, but I am not going to do that because we've got news. News. News must win. Oh, but tea sure does sound good right now. All right. Keep on going. That was pretty heavy. So here's a nicer story. So people are still being slaughtered and brutally. People are still being murdered in a terrible way in Myanmar. But India's border state of Manipur has withdrawn an order that told officials to politely turn away refugees crossing from Myanmar. The state's home ministry said its instruction had been misconstrued. The earlier order was issued amid reports of refugees entering Manipur after a coup in Myanmar last month. Protesters against the takeover have been met with increasing force. Military is reported to have killed more than 500 people since February 1st. Thousands have reportedly been attempting to flee across the border to Thailand too, only to be turned back. We talked about that yesterday. The government in Bangkok has said it will respect
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
Okay. On Tuesday, the Home Ministry in Manipur in India's northeast issued a second order saying the government was taking all humanitarian steps and continues to provide all aid, including treating any injured refugees from Myanmar. While the first order, dated March 26, had said anyone with grievous injuries could receive medical attention, it prohibited setting up of camps that provided food or shelter. It also asked the officials to stop any attempts to enroll refugees in India's National Biometric ID Scheme. An agreement between the two countries allow Indians and Burmese to cross the border and stay up to 14 days, but the border's been closed since March due to COVID. It's hard to say how many refugees from Myanmar have entered India since the coup, but some estimates put the number at 700. The numbers are expected to increase as violence against anti-coup protesters continue. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully Myanmar's neighbors can take on some refugees. That kicked off a huge crisis when all the Syrian refugees started fleeing. So, that's sad, but you know what? Sometimes it is all in your head. A mystery brain disorder baffles Canadian medicine. This comes to us from The Guardian. Spasms, memory loss, and hallucinations among symptoms of 43 patients in Acadian region of New Brunswick province. So doctors in Canada are concerned they could be dealing with a previously unknown brain disease amid a string of cases involving memory loss, hallucinations, and muscle atrophy. Politicians in the province of New Brunswick have demanded answers, but with so few cases, experts say there are far more questions than answers, and have urged the public not to panic. For more than a year, public officials have been tracking a cluster of 43 cases of suspected neurological diseases in the province with no known causes. Residents first learned of the investigation last week after a leaked memo from the province's public health agency asked physicians to be on the lookout for symptoms similar to Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, a rare fatal brain disease caused by misformed proteins known as prions. We're collaborating with different national groups and experts. However, no clear cause has been identified at this time. A number of the symptoms, including memory loss, vision problems, and abdominal jerking movements, triggered an alert with Canada's CJD, that's Charlie Juliet Delta Surveillance Network. Despite the initial similarities, screening produced no confirmed cases of CJD, which is, I guess, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. So this goes on describing it. But here we go. The ending is, the saga exposes the frustrating reality of medicine. Diagnosing a patient can be tough and is a task riddled with unknowns. Neurologists can often deploy a number of tools in treating a patient when the root cause of an ailment is unclear, and then the patient somehow recovers. You come away never knowing what they actually had. We see odd neurological symptoms from time to time. Sometimes we figure them out, sometimes we don't. And I feel like I got a little deja vu reading that last bit. This is dated Tuesday, March 30th, so this is a new one, but I'm wondering, it's probably not worth it to go dig around to find it. I did cut this song that we're going to listen to here in a minute down to 2 minutes or 2.5 minutes. It was 4 and something, and it is from Garbage, so if I'm still on my 90s kick as far as songs and stuff go. So anyway, we've got that coming up, but I'm going to try and fit one more story in. There was a stampede at the tribute to late President Magufuli, and at least 45 people have died. Tanzanian police announced Tuesday that 45 people had died during a stampede in Dar es Salaam on March 21st as mourners paid their respects to the late President John Magufuli. The crush took place when thousands of grieving citizens tried to push their way into a stadium in the city to bid farewell. There were a lot of people who wanted to get in the stadium, and some were not patient. They tried to force their way in, and that resulted in a stampede. So this is really kind of sad news. But this is the guy who died. So anyway. I'm only happy when it rains. Here's the song. I'm only happy when it's complicated. And though I know you can't appreciate it, I'm only happy when it rains. You know I love it when the news is bad. Why it feels so good to feel so sad. I'm only happy when it rains. Yeah, I've been putting the song and the music, hear the music thing in just random spots towards the end of the show, and it sure does surprise me whenever the sounds kick on. So I hope it's not too jarring for the show. All right, well, we've got about 7 minutes to go, but I want to be sure and not forget to mention that news to me. And everything you hear on and on radio is all powered by SDF, a public access Unix system. So SDF.org, that's here at DeltaFoxtrot.org. You can go there, it's a public access Unix system. You can get a shell account. You can go to com, that's where the chat is. You can chat with everybody while live shows are going on, or just if you want to talk to people. Other people use SDF, that's a great way to do it. And stick around, because after this show, every day at 1930 UTC, and actually, this show's only Monday through Friday. The Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe is every single day at 1930 UTC. It's a fun time, and you definitely should stick around for that. So, all right, let's go ahead here and talk about some technology, some kind of cool stories, I thought, that were kind of neat tech-wise. So Volkswagen, VW, let's like Victor Whiskey, VW confirms it will rebrand its U.S. unit as Volkswagen, since it'll be V-O-L-T-S-Wagen. So instead of Volk, V-O-L-K, so instead of, it's going to change the K to a T, so from Kilo to Tango, to be more like an electronic thing. German automaker Volkswagen AG's U.S. unit confirmed Tuesday it will rename its U.S. operations as Volkswagen of America as it shifts its focus to electric vehicles. The revised name takes effect in May, and the announcement came after several outlets on Monday reported a draft release mistakenly posted on the automaker's U.S. website. We might be changing out our K for a T, but we aren't changing is this brand's commitment to making best-in-class vehicles. The German automaker is committed to sell 1 million EVs worldwide by 2025. And, it's basically just talking about how they're rebranding, or they're redoing it because they're going to aim or market their electronic or battery-powered cars. So pretty neat there. I thought that was kind of cool, at least silly anyway. So SpaceX, space travel, anything that could be in a sci-fi novel, that's always cool to listen to or read about. Well, SpaceX cut the live stream of its latest launch of its Starship spacecraft amid an apparent explosion. The latest test of Starship and the SN at Sierra Nevada 1, Sierra November 1-1 version that SpaceX had hoped would fly up in the air and then land safely on the ground. Appeared to have been a failure, though. It was not at all clear what happened. Official video was streaming from a camera on board the Starship itself and froze, and then the company brought its stream to an end. SpaceX's commentator on the stream said the company appeared to have lost all the data from the vehicle, suggesting it had been entirely destroyed by whatever impact happened. Large chunks of smoking debris were seen falling some distance from the launch pad. In recent tests, the craft came back to Earth and exploded on its launch pad during and then soon after the landing. The SN-11 test would have been the first that didn't end in rapid unscheduled disassembly, as SpaceX refers to crashes. But SN-11 appears to have potentially blown up while it was still in the air and on its way back to the launch pad. Thick fog meant that it was not clear what happened to the craft. Videos taken from the ground by people watching the launch only showed pieces of debris falling from what appeared to be an explosion. Cameras and equipment that were set up by external company, including NASA's Spaceflight and Everyday Astronaut, appear to have been damaged from the blast. So, pretty wild. And this is just silliness, but I thought it was cute. A child has tweeted gibberish from a U.S. nuclear agency account. That's right. A young child inadvertently sparked confusion over the weekend by posting an unintelligible tweet to the official account of U.S. Strategic Command. Why does a kid have access to that? Well, the agency responsible for safeguarding America's nuclear weapons, some social media users feared the account may have been hacked, but it's since been revealed a young member of the account's social media manager's family responsible for posting the tweet, which was golf Mike Lima X-ray Z Sierra Sierra Alpha Whiskey. So just a bunch of letters, which was then deleted within minutes. A guy on Twitter filed a Freedom of Information Act request and was told that it was done by a child. A spokesman also confirmed suggesting the account had been hacked were false. Absolutely nothing nefarious occurred. So that was kind of cute. All right, our last minute. Let's just hit up some details. The U.S. has barred rubber gloves from Malaysian firm due to evidence of forced labor. So banned firm Top Glove also supplied NHS hospitals, prompting calls for guarantees on those sources. But Top Glove is the world's largest manufacturer of rubber gloves and has been banned from exporting its products from Malaysia to the U.S. after CBP, Customs and Border Protection, made a finding that its products are made using forced and indentured labor. An Asian American woman was attacked in an apparent hate crime in New York City. A vicious attack on the Asian American woman near New York City's Times Square is drawing widespread condemnation and raising alarms about the failure of bystanders to intervene amid a rash of anti-Asian American violence across the U.S. And yeah, it should go without saying, but I'm pretty sure all of SDF, and at least this show, we're totally against all hate and want to love everybody. And so anyway, fuck those guys. I hope they catch whoever did it. I can see the clock ticking down. New details released of Cuomo's VIP COVID list for members of his inner circle. They offered preferential treatment to people that he knew to get vaccinations. And Stanford scientists have deconstructed the Pfizer and Moderna mRNA vaccines and published their genome on GitHub. So get your RNA genome on GitHub, I guess. All right, that's all the time we got today. Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.